Alyssa Brent Weissman, welcome to The Signal.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe you could tell our listeners what NerdCamp 2.0 is all about.
Sure. Well, in the first book, which was just called NerdCamp, which came out in 2011, we met a 10-year-old boy named Gabe, who was very excited to be going to the Summer Center for Gifted Enrichment, a summer camp that you have to take a test to get into. It's for very smart kids. And he loves learning and loves school, and he was looking forward to his summer. But he was also excited because he was getting a new stepbrother named Zach. And Zach is exactly his age. His father was remarrying. And Gabe has always wanted a sibling. But when he meets Zach, Zach is super cool, and he's a surfer. He's from L.A., and he thinks that anybody who would be on a math team or who likes reading or would go to a summer camp where you learn things is a nerd. So in that first book, Gabe goes off to camp and he has a great time, but he's also at the same time writing letters home to Zach and conveniently leaving out the fact that this summer camp is what Zach would call nerd camp. So we pick up again in NerdCamp 2.0, and it's the next summer. The truth has come out, and Gabe and Zach are actually pretty good friends. They get along well, even though they have their differences, but they respect one another. And Zach is all set to go to his own summer camp, which is in the same vicinity as Gabe. He's going back to Summer Center. They're both in upstate New York, but there's a series of wildfires in that area, and Zach's camp ends up pretty much getting wiped out. And so the two camps, this regular summer camp with Zach and all these cool kids and the nerd camp, are going to be sharing one campground. So you've got the two brothers there, and the chapters are alternate from Gabe's perspective and Zach's perspective, and we see the summer play out as these two separate camps literally essentially go to war.
I love the fact that Gabe and Zach, while they're so different, they really are at heart very similar kids. They're very good-natured, good-hearted kids, and they really do see the best in each other. And they're both, in their own way, a little jealous of each other.
Yes, and actually one of the biggest challenges writing this book was writing from Zach's perspective, writing half of the book from his perspective. It was pretty easy for me to be in a nerdy perspective and write from Gabe's point of view. And then, of course, I'd written a whole book pretty much from Gabe's point of view, and I was coming back to him. And the first draft that I wrote incorporating Zach's point of view, my editor pointed out in many places when she read it that he really was kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And I had to do a little bit more work. And the more I got to know Zach and sort of rewrote things, I started to have a lot more respect for Zach. And I think finding that common ground between the two boys and realizing that Zach, it really is a good person at heart, and that he and Gabe sort of have some things in common and they're a little bit jealous of each other helped a lot to make his character more three-dimensional and round out the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have kids that you rely on to get the slang and the language and sort of the rhythm of their lives and the things that they're interested in? I'm always curious when people write for younger audiences how they stay in tune with a true, because these voices sound true and the characters ring true.
Thank you. That's good to hear. I have kids myself, but they're 3 and 16 months.
So no help at all.
So not really very much help at all for writing for this age group. And I used to teach at the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth, which is actually what inspired the first NerdCamp book. And I would teach kids who were 10 and 11. And now I run a creative writing class for kids around that age here in Baltimore City. So that does help me kind of being around them. But I'm not really around kids this age all that often. I read a lot of children's literature, which helps. And I guess mostly I'm sort of remembering what it was like when I was a kid. But of course, some things, it's tough because, as you say, the slang and things like that, I just hope that I'm up to date.
The card trading, I thought, was really clever with the cool kids were trading baseball cards and the nerd kids were trading
element cards. Right, which I invented. My little brother asked me when he read the book if those are real, and he thinks I should start a business of actually making element cards, which each one has an element from chemistry where you have to try to collect the whole periodic table.
That's hilarious. Yeah. That is a great idea. I mean, I can see a lot of kids who would read this book being like, I want to get element
right.
cards too.
And they all are aiming to get a noble gas is the the big win.
How did you know that you wanted to write books for young readers?
It was something that I've always wanted to do. I've always been a really avid reader. And it was books that I read when I was about in this age group, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10, that just made me really fall in love with literature and made me want to write. I remember being about 11 and feeling very stuck because I'd sort of outgrown a lot of the what we call middle grade books, or that are still called middle grade books, in terms of, I guess, in terms of vocabulary or challenge or reading level. I was a good reader, and yet I wasn't really interested in, you know, the raciness and edginess that encompasses a lot of young adult books. And so I still, to this day, hope that I'm sort of filling a little bit of that gap for kids who want more wholesome content. It's maybe a little bit more of a challenging read, but it's not about anything that's particularly, you know, edgy or gritty.
Right. Twilight, we don't need.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
You're not writing the
new romance
Twilight series.
Is not. Yeah.
Well, I wonder if you wouldn't want to share some of the book just to get a taste for our listeners. You could choose one of the boys to read from. And,
sure. Absolutely. So this is going to be from chapter 14, and it's from Gabe's perspective. So he's the one at Nerd Camp. And what's just happened is that Zach, his stepbrother, was unpacking and realized that he didn't pack underwear. So Zach and one of his bunkmates, Abbott, came over to borrow underwear from Gabe, and Abbott was not very friendly to Gabe and his bunkmates. So we're in Gabe's bunk, and they're talking about that encounter. The minute Zach and Abbott left, Gabe sank onto Nikhil's bottom bed. "What on the third planet from the sun was that about?" Wesley said. "He need Gabe's underpants," 3 o'clock explained. "I got that," Wesley said. "I mean, how dare they come into our territory?" "Yeah," said Nikhil. "The director said we have to stay on the SCGE part of the campus, and Camp Seneca isn't allowed here. Didn't they get copies of the map?" "Gabe's stepbrother coming here is one thing," Wesley said, pacing the area between the beds and waving his finger for emphasis. "But to bring that other guy with him, the one who made fun of us by the cafeteria..." "I know." Gabe took off his glasses and pressed his palms into his eyes. "I'm so sorry, guys. This is terrible." "Terrible squared," Wesley agreed. "It was bad by the cafeteria, but our bunk is our bunk. It's supposed to be a safe zone." "Terrible cubed." Nikhil pulled out a copy of the camp map that their counselor had given them. "Our bunk should be neutral, like Switzerland in both world wars." "I think the whole campground should be neutral," Gabe said, "with everyone respecting everyone. But our bunk should be our area." He pointed to Nikhil's map, on which the SCGE areas were marked by vertical stripes and the Camp Seneca areas were marked by horizontal ones. "Right," said Wesley. He ripped off a piece of tape and stuck the map on the wall. Pointing to the neutral white parts of the map, which signified shared zones, he took a pencil from his pocket and added Switzerland to the legend. Then he used the pencil like a pointer for his briefing. "The whole campground is Switzerland, and our bunk is Allied territory, where we can measure for our maps and practice our digits of pi and wear our dinosaur underwear. And they can stay in their bunks, where they can do whatever it is they like to do and do it without even bringing underwear." They all stood around looking at the map and one another, indignant. But then Nikhil sighed and sat on his bed. "I guess even the Allies had to worry about invasion." Gabe sat down next to him. "Yeah, and that was the bombing of Pearl Harbor." Wesley took his pencil and drew horizontal stripes through bunk 3B, turning Nikhil's campus map into a war playbook, a record of boundaries redrawn and regions lost and won. They sat in silence, no longer excited to hang their room decorations or perfect their color war algorithm or even protect themselves from inhaling toxic fire fumes. Summer Center was supposed to be about the brazen pursuit of academic happiness, but not even hanging out in their bunk was safe, which meant not even hanging out in their bunk was fun.
That's Alyssa Brent Weissman reading from Nerd Camp 2.0. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for coming in. The book was great. I really enjoyed it. One of the great things of my job is I get to read all kinds of books, including books for 8 to 12-year-old kids. So thanks a lot, and good luck. I hope a lot of kids read it.
Thank you so much.
Alyssa Brent Weissman is the author of 5 books for 8 to 12-year-old readers. Her latest title is Nerd Camp 2.0. You can find out more about the author and her other books online at evweissman.com. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan.